condition, my condition was ill.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Oh. Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
Oh, it's, it's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown.
Well, no thanks, Dicey Dax. I'm telling you, he's Mr. Matt Weber on the board. He's supervising a board of carnage in the market this morning. S&P futures down 47, Dow futures down 456, NASDAQ futures down 132. I think the operative word there would be ouch. Well, I'm just saying. Kevin, how are you?
Good. Hey, Board of Carnage would probably be a pretty good, maybe rock band name.
Yeah, boy. Well, there's a lot of good, we have to dig up some of the rock band, lyrics from like the 60s and 70s to try and describe this world, but I don't have to take any of those drugs to understand them like the guys were on when they wrote them. Just saying.
I think you need to take the drugs now.
Really?
Yeah.
The drugs don't sound bad.
Yeah.
Let me tell you. Because you can't sing anyway, so you might as well hear the sounds artificially. At least in California, did you see the restrictions they put on Thanksgiving?
No turkey.
Oh no, it's more awesome than that. So you're limited to three households at your gatherings, and they have to be outside and should be limited to 2 hours. But my favorite part is when they said singing, chanting, shouting, and physical exertion significantly increases the risk of COVID-19 transmission because these activities increase the release of respiratory droplets and fine aerosols into the air. Because of this, singing, chanting, and shouting are strongly discouraged, but if they occur, the following rules and recommendations apply. All people who are singing or chanting should wear a face covering at all times while singing and or chanting. Do you chant? Do you guys chant at your Thanksgiving gatherings, by the way?
No.
Of course.
including anyone who is leading a song or chant, because these activities pose a very high risk of COVID-19 transmission. Face coverings are essential to reduce the spread of respiratory droplets. But then you have to maintain, I won't read the rest of it other than to say you have to maintain your physical distancing. I'm glad they call it physical distancing, though. The term social distancing bugs the crap out of me because there is nothing social about it. But the final one is people who are singing or chanting are strongly encouraged to do so quietly at or below the volume of a normal speaking voice. So you can speak at your speaking voice volume, but if you sing, you gotta whisper.
That is unbelievable.
When are we going to, as a group, say, whoever had the time at the government to write that stuff up, they got nothing to do, fire them?
California Department of Public Health, that's where we go. Has the most totalitarian Soviet bloc regime ever done anything so severe?
No. Why are we putting up with it? I had somebody wrote me yesterday because I was, of course, ragging huge on Jay and his new things that are now hitting Chicago. They said, well, he's doing it to save lives. My immediate response was, everything the Nazis did was for safety, correct?
Not well, accusing you anybody, have that, and you know I'm not fond of the Nazi references, although sometimes this year they may apply in a lot of cases. But aside from that, if everything he's doing to save lives, how's it working?
It's not working. That's my, I mean, I don't know, I was met something we had, had a group the other night. It was a small group, under six. And
I said, good. I said, saved lives, Tom.
Well, but if we could find 300 million mountaintops and pack everybody up with a sandwich and put a UV over the sandwiches for a week, for 2 weeks, and send everybody to their mountaintop with their roll of TP, their case of water, and their 48 sandwiches, and everybody stays there by themselves, comes back, if they had COVID when they went there, they come back clean, and when they come back down to the valley, which is the country, and there wouldn't be any the COVID all here because there was nobody to jump into, all died, didn't jump on any animals and wait for us or anything like that, just all died, and we came back down, and we could, if we could do that, I'd be all for it. But anything short
of
it.
Yeah, if you're going to come back down, and then you're going to get it.
Well, I'm saying, if we
well, thought... I would like the vacation. I'd enjoy the vacation.
Yeah. But I'm saying, if we could do something like that, it would be worthwhile. I mean, I'd be all for it. But the idea that you're going to ban bars and restaurants because those people are having a good time and they look like they're too close to me, yet you're going to ignore totally the three guys in the pickup truck that pull up and mow your lawn that are riding around in the pickup truck in the front seat. Because
or your warehouse workers,
or your warehouse workers, or your Jimmy John's people, or your Amazon people, or your policemen riding around a squad car. If you totally turn a blind eye to all the rest of the stuff, you're just a buffoon. You're just a buffoon because all you're doing is picking and choosing. You're not doing anything. If you were, I'd be all for it. If somebody handed me something and said, just like Carl was saying 2 weeks ago, that the contact tracers in Tennessee said that the worst things were construction sites where they have outdoor cans, basically, no place to wash your hands, and nursing homes, yet they're closing bars and restaurants and leaving the construction sites open. If you're going to do ignorant stuff like that, please get out of office, will you? Right?
Yeah. And yet they'll all get reelected.
Well, because they're doing something. They're doing something. I mean, and that's the part of the politics we're into now. If you got to be doing something, even if it's useless, and we've seen, stuff like this, if you read about it, you read about it forever. Somebody comes through. I mean, I don't want to get. Well, I guess we're only on podcasts, but when Nixon came out with his wage price controls, I seem to recall that the market rallied for like three straight days. I don't know how, at the time it was a pretty good rally. Now, of course, there's been all kinds of other rallies, so it's not statistically significant anymore. But it was, somebody had to do something. And I remember, I was in, where the hell were we? What year was that? Was that 70? So we were still in college, but I was still taking my first couple economics courses, and I remember, one professor saying, this is not a very good idea. And my stepfather was doing the MBA program at, what do they call it? What's the weekend program? The executive program? And I go, what did you think of this? He goes, I think it's a pretty bad idea. But then he says, but you had to do something, and everybody's happy that he did something. People just can't stand non-action, right? So years later, I'm working for Allied Van Lines, and my boss, Bob Sealer, terrific guy, and one hell of a handball player, by the way. He kicked my hand. Anyway. He was talking about he could kill with either hand. Big, strong Polish guy. Boy, oh, boy. But anyway, so I said to him, one day we got on the subject of him going to school, and he was going to the University of Chicago. And, of course, the executive program in those days, you went on Friday night and you went on Saturday, right? And no, you went Friday 1 week and Saturday the next. Well, the Fridays, all you did, as soon as you're done, the professors, the guys, headed right to Martini's for, guess what, Martini's, right? So they're sort of the cab with Walter Fackler, who's the dean of the business school. And he lights up this huge stogie in the front seat. So somebody in the back seat goes, Mr. Fackler, or Dean Fackler, what did you think of Nixon's wage price controls? He takes a huge draw on his stogie, and he goes, well, boys, let me tell you, wage price controls did for the economy what pantyhose did for bleep bleeping, and the guys go, what? he goes,
can't say that in class anymore.
Can't say that in class anymore. And but on the way to Martini's,
I don't mind coordinator to be all over my ass.
Oh, God. What a great line. You know, it was like it's sort of like what you just said. It's what face masks did to singing. You know, I mean, it was useless because there was, I don't know if you recall how many exceptions there were. If there was, if you couldn't keep the prices where they were, they gave you an exception. Remember?
Unbelievable, isn't it?
Yeah, it was the same thing. I mean, here, look at the people. I'll say this, I've said it a million times. I've never seen a situation where the people who are necessary people are people that are around to serve other people. The idea, if you come back from Indiana, you gotta quarantine for 14 days unless you're delivering my sandwich. Or you're mowing Jay's lawn. I mean, the thought of that, I mean, if you were to ask anybody in fifth grade, they'd say, by the way, who are really essential people? Somebody's gonna go, well, police, fire, the guys who make the water come up to your place, the guys who work the electrical stuff, the gas company. I mean, we'd name 10 people.
The grocery store.
Yeah, well, maybe.
Maybe. How are you going to eat?
Well, but I'm saying you might have a place where...
Explain how that's a maybe.
I'm going to say it's a maybe before you get all over me, that you could have a place where everybody gets a box for a week to take home. Not that you get to go in there up and down the aisle like nothing ever happened and bitch because your favorite brand of TP isn't there.
That's, so who's gonna fill the box with
saying,
food and where they're gonna
but,
get the
but
food?
But I'm saying it would eating is essential. Yes.
Thank you. That's all.
But I'm saying the idea,
the fact that it's actually
no.
It's more important than anything.
Listen to me. There's a big difference between you having something to eat at home that maybe they could drop off at your front door and everybody gets the same thing, and you getting to go to the Jewel and expecting it to be open, and if you ask the guy where the horseradish is, you expect there to be a guy there for you to ask.
That's fine. No matter where you're getting the food, you have to get the food.
But there's a big difference between...
Otherwise, everyone's dead within about 3 days or whatever.
I'm talking about sustenance eating. I'm talking about...
That's fine. I agree with you. That's fine. But it's food. Someone's got to
I understand.
Prepare it, grow it, pick it up, deliver it, warehouse it, whatever.
But the upper class is not happy with you getting dropped wafers and water like a fallout shelter. That's not what these guys want. They want life to be as close to right for them with other people doing it, taking the risk. Right? That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about if they dropped off at your door and my door, here's your box of wafers, Mr. Howe, and by the way, here's your 48 things of water. See you next week. You and I'd be sitting there going, hey, maybe I'll trade you a wafer for a water, right? I mean that's what I'm talking about. I mean, that's not what these guys are talking about. They want everything to be as perfect for them as possible. And all those people don't count to make that happen. That's all I'm saying.
I think everyone wants everything to be as perfect as possible. I want to be able to go to the bar.
You shouldn't get any mail.
Everyone has a different level.
I know, but you shouldn't get any mail.
I don't want any mail.
Where I go on it is I'm not going to tell anybody else what they, you know, what they should or should not do. If you feel unsafe, stay home. It's your prerogative.
Yes. But what I'm saying,
if I don't feel unsafe or if I don't think the food is safe, whatever it is. You know, they just last week issued the new guideline that you don't have to wash your food anymore. Well, good, because I haven't been all along. But aside from that, people have been washing their food. Yeah, I guess they have.
What kind of food?
We're just all over the place with crazy things that we're asking people to do that clearly are of no consequence. Otherwise, nobody would be concerned by now.
Well, wait a minute. You know I love to cook, although nobody will come over anymore, but... when you say don't wash your food, are we talking about food you're going to cook or food you're not going to cook? There's a big difference.
Well, there's produce that you're going to at least rinse, right? That's normal. What I'm talking about is that you set up in your kitchen on the counter a half of the counter that is your contaminated zone and a half of the counter that isn't, and then you one by one as you unpack your groceries you disinfect the cans, you wipe down the bananas on the peel, all of those kinds of things. You wash down everything that you take out and you put it into the safe side, and now you can put it away, but only after you disinfect the first side.
There are people that are doing that, which is insane.
There absolutely are people who are doing that.
You remind me of Mrs. Ward. Remember Dave Ward?
I remember him. I don't know that I remember Mrs.
Well,
Ward.
Seven of us trapped in my dad's 90. Talk about a fruitless trip. We trapped in his 98 Oldsmobile. We drove seven people down to Florida to see the Notre Dame Nebraska game. Talk about a wasted trip with Johnny Rogers.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, you got to see Johnny Rogers play before prison.
Well, I was in the fifth row in the end zone, like almost on the ground, and all I saw was his number running away from me and his number running toward me.
Over and over and over.
Over
again.
And over and over. What was that, 45-7 or something? Oh, God.
It was.
A lot to a little, yeah.
The Irish came back and won the national championship the next year.
Well, we had Cliff Brown as our ace quarterback that year. I mean, that was a bad deal. Anyway, and she says, oh, God, you guys are going to be drinking cans of Coke and stuff on the way down there? And we're like, yeah, we'll save the beer till we get there. Oh, no, you got to make sure you disinfect the top of the can. I'm going, what? She had some disease we were all going to get if we didn't do it, so she gave us something in a little jar that we were supposed to disinfect the top of the cans with. Of course, it was never used. Like, what was she talking? She had some disease. I think it was the spoo. The spoo was the disease you get from contaminated. Wasn't that why they use you use lime for Corona? It's to disinfect the top of the can.
I don't know, because I always tell them not to give me the lime. I do like Corona, but I don't let them tell them
but
not
I mean,
to give me the lime.
The purpose of the lime is gone once you open it. The idea is to disinfect the top, I thought. Just saying. Anyway, we got the market in a crap over here. Kevin, I looked at the, unbeknownst to most, as we can't get this plan together, it doesn't look like we're going to get this stimulus plan together, which we start laying people off now, it's just not good. The Fed balance sheet, without any sort of, shall we say, hoopla, the previous record was $7,168,000,000,000. We just creeped over to $7,177,000,000,000. So we're back up to a new record. And we also have money supply for 6 months or 26 weeks, choose your poison, is roughly a growth of 32%. And I'm going to say that there was a day in World War II when the Germans were, Battle of Britain in the air.
The Germans were bombing Pearl Harbor.
Well, the Germans were messing around with Britain, and there was a day when, you know, they were fighting back and forth, and the Battle of Britain lasted, about a month or more, and there was a day where every single plane that the British could possibly throw in the air was in the air. And I remember reading this from, it was in The Man Called Intrepid. One general looked at another and said, it better not get any worse than this. It better go the other way today because this is all we got. And I have a feeling that if you look at these numbers the Fed's got right now, this is all they got. And we better figure out some ankle straps up sort of solutions here, or because they're, to go from 7 to 8 to 9 right now, or to go to a 50% increase in the money supply is like peeing in a lake at this point. And somehow, someplace, Kevin, we're going to have to get some common sense. And
because the only, there isn't all we got. There's one thing we have left, and that's just to reopen everything. And there's already a lot of carnage in there of, you know, stuff that isn't coming back. And okay, you know, I get that part. But the longer we continue to suppress it, the more damage we're doing there. So, you know, is that going to bring us all the way back? No, we are kind of, you know, as I've said all along on the stimulus, and you've said it and everybody else has said it, you know, we have just so overloaded ourselves that we're going to have to deal with it. We're going to have to pay the price for that sooner or later. But, you know what, unless we get more economic activity, there's no way we're going to improve anything.
But we can't, and again, I use the ridiculous statement of Tony Dinozzo on NCIS, I found that if I do the same things I always did, I get the results I always got. And we're at that stage here. We can't have Lori and Tony and Jay and all the other governors and the president, even if it's the new president, we can't go back to the same crap that has not worked. And when I say the same crap that hasn't worked, is trying to identify the people who didn't vote for you or the people who, you know, or the things that you don't do as a mayor or an alderman, and find a way to tax the people that do it. If you don't drive downtown or you got a limousine, you tax the parking garages. That whole story, if you're poor or think you are, you tax the rich. If you're rich or you think you are, you want to broaden the base, which means make the guys at the bottom pay more. At some point here, we can't just be fingering the other person. What was the old story when we were in school where the guy, he'd point to somebody and he'd put both hands in front of him, pointing the arrows at the two guys next to him? We need to stop doing that. And somewhere we have, in this whole mess, we have to, the thing that's destroying Illinois before this happened, we need to fix this pension thing. It absolutely has to happen, and I don't care if we have to drag people down to Springfield for a constitutional convention, whatever we have to do. The numbers are just, they're pitiless. They just will not work ever, ever, ever. And if you go any kind of recession on top of it, it just makes it worse. And somehow, we need to look at the solutions, and it's not, Lori, sorry, giving people tickets for 6 miles an hour in a red light camera. That's a pimple on the ass of an elephant, and by the way, it's all you do is aggravate people. We have to think bigger, Kevin, and I don't see any hint of that whatsoever. And in the last couple of days, since I think, you know, Biden, I don't know if he gets in or doesn't get in, I'm listening to that side. All I hear is drivel from a different direction. There is absolutely not a plan there anywhere that I've found. And we can't be federal, state, and local right now without a plan anyplace, and I don't see one. I hope I'm not being doggy down here, but do you?
The only plan left is the giant meteor.
Yeah. What's the thought?
That, you know, and that actually would have a good chance of working.
Yeah.
It'd solve all our problems.
Yeah, but if it lands in the ocean, if it lands on land, and you get this huge mushroom cloud of dirt, and all of a sudden we get a lot colder, well, at least it shuts up the global warming people. But what does it do for Maddie's softball if it's even colder, for God's sake?
Hey, Maddie's playing fall ball. He knows cold.
Not like this year.
It's cold on Monday.
This is bad. This year's bad. We're supposed to be, what, 60 now? We haven't been over above 50 in how long?
It's been miserable for about two straight weeks.
Yeah. So, anyhow, Kevin, let's see, last night, baseball. Was that even baseball? I don't want to get into this because I've been in too much.
I don't know. I fell asleep. I woke up for the last half inning.
I woke up for the last three innings. The starting pitcher was 30 seconds between pitch. A 4-hour game with 27 strikeouts. That's.
Yeah, I could get behind a pitch clock.
Well, how does a guy like this Lowell guy with the world's biggest shift on him? How does a dude bet 120 in the World Series? We would have given him the entire left side, not even try a bunt.
You know, and shifting is not new. You know, it'd be one thing if shifting just became a thing this year, then I would say, okay, I understand why hitters haven't adapted. They need time. They want to work on things in the off season. But now you've gone through a few off seasons in this mode. How can you not have strategies to beat the shift?
I
don't understand it. It makes no sense to me. But I would never. I would never let people do that to me, because you know they know they have the statistics to support what they're doing. They know how much they're shaving off of your ability to get on base on a percentage basis. Why would you ever let anybody shave that much off of your ability to get on base without adapting to it? It just makes no sense to me at all.
Well, is he?
Whether it's putting down a bunt just to keep them honest and doing it and not doing it once to say, see, I can do it, but doing it, doing it on a regular basis until they move back, or whether it's, learning to hit the other way, and learning to handle the bat a little bit better. And if you sacrifice some power, that's the way it goes, because, you know, getting on base, means runs.
Well, yeah, and I could see if you're a speed challenged guy like me, a right-handed batter, if they shift around to the left, it's reasonably difficult for somebody to push one past the pitcher towards where the second baseman should be and outrun that one. But for a lefty, there's a massive advantage being a lefty, in baseball. I mean, clearly in softball, well, when it was 55 feet bases, it was a huge advantage, but still an advantage at 60. But if you're a lefty, how do you not just, you know, as you turn to run, you drop one down to third baseline and go. It's so much easier. I mean, I don't see how you can't do that. I mean, well, anyway, SP Futures down 47, NASDAQ Futures down 123. Come back, talk more about the market, talk about, I don't know, the interesting stuff with Jeff yesterday about the election. We'll talk about that too. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howie's Mr. Miller over the board. SP Futures down 48. Yeah, 48. NASDAQ Futures down 126. Dow Futures down 495. The only stocks that are showing any life at all here are stocks that are earnings. GE, I'm kind of pissed. I tried to do 7.5 spread. Stocks up 28 cents to 739. I tried to do 7.5 spread. I only got a partial. I guess I could have paid a penny more. I got the rest of it. They are up a little bit. We've got FireEye at earnings is up a little bit. Juniper is, the FireEye's up 37 cents, but today that's looking real good. Juniper's up 85 cents, and Boeing is up $1.22 as they only lost $1.39 versus $2.92. How they only lost $1.39, I have no idea, but that's what they claim. Anyway, that's what that all is. Over in Asia, we've got Nikkei, Asia's kind of slow here. Of course, we weren't down all that much, early last night. Nikkei down 67.3%, Shanghai up 14.5%, Hang Seng down 78.3%. Europe, however, whack. DAX down 383, that's 3.2%, that's a lot. FTSE down 93, that's 1.6. back around down 132, that's 2.8. Yesterday, for a way of review, we had the Dow was down 222. Dow stocks been getting smoked. S&P down 10. NASDAQ, however, was up 72, mostly Amazon. The more we struggle, the more they were out there up like another $70 or something. Bonds, 0.75, so that's down from the 0.81 the other day. Bund, minus 0.63. Again, that's lower. Japan, positive 0.02. We've got oil down 183, which is a big move, 4.5%. 37.74 was 41.42 10 days ago, maybe. Brent down 157, 39.63. Natural gas unchanged at 302. RBOB down 4 cents at 109. We've got gold down 19 bucks at 18.92. We're selling every earnings this morning. Silver down 48 cents, 24.08. Copper down 2 cents, 306. Man, I got a call yesterday from a guy. Wants me to help him do some investing. He's into guns and ammo and propane heaters. What do you think?
Sounds good.
Just saying, you know. He says that the you can't even buy ammo now. And in some places at ranges, you can only buy ammo that you are going to use on the range. There's not even enough for take-home. Just saying. What do you got for us? On that note,
I was waiting for you to ask me. 37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Very quiet on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. No issues to report. Do have a crash downtown Grand Avenue right near Lakeshore Drive that has Grand Avenue on the westbound side closed due to that crash. Traffic on Lakeshore Drive is not affected, though, so nothing of major concern there. Off the expressways, looks like on the south side, Racine between 47th and 45th is closed due to police activity. And then out in the western suburbs, Route 59, there's a crash at North Avenue, and that's a busy intersection, so crews are on the scene there. But everything else looking good out there. Weather today, we will finally warm up a bit this afternoon after we're in the low 30s this morning, but we should see a partly cloudy high of 52 later on today. And then we'll be in the 50s for a couple of days, through Saturday at least, so that'll be nice. Right now it is clear and 33 going up to a partly cloudy high of 52. For our Phoenix listeners, sunny with a high of 71 today. Right now it's clear and 48. In sports, the LA Dodgers are your 2020 abbreviated season World Series champions after they beat the Rays in 6, winning 3-1 last night. The Rays unbelievably pulled their ace pitcher after he threw 5 shutout innings and gave up a leadoff single to start the 6th, and they pulled him. They didn't want him to face the lineup 3 times through, and 6 pitches later, they were down 2-1 and ended up losing 3-1 after he had struck out 9 through 5 innings and was basically unhittable. So
overmanaging. Who's the manager, our guy, when he pulled Hendricks?
Well, Hendricks at least gave up a couple of runs, but still, yeah, these big league managers get into the playoffs and get into the situations, and man, they really overmanage the hell out of these games. And I get it. I mean, you can lose quickly early in a game, but my God, that guy was rolling last night. And the Dodgers were thrilled to face the bullpen after they couldn't hit Snell for 5 innings. But anyway, Dodgers win their first World Series since 1988, and Corey Seager was your MVP.
So what do you think happens now that you can sort of hear, well, they allege, and they haven't been there since you can't get in the place, that's why it's so quiet, that you can hear everybody in the other dugout. So what if you're, now that you're the manager, and say, for instance, you came out and pulled the pitcher, which would be yourself, and all of a sudden you go back to the dugout and you hear the guys on the other side, I can't believe that buffoon pulled that guy and put this idiot in there. How would you like to hear that?
Not good.
Well, the only thing I'll say about that is that the Rays have a deep bullpen, so they wouldn't have said they put this idiot in. They may have said, "I can't," you know, "thank God they pulled Snell."
Well, did you hear the long story the other night? I mean, you couldn't not hear it. It was because they talked about it for like 3 hours. You got something to talk about during these games because there is no action. They went through every single guy in the bullpen's arm angle and how confusing it was for the batter for a guy to change arm angles every. I guess that could be true, but is this something revolutionary now or what?
Well, it's easier to study it now, because for a couple of reasons. But one is that the technology that they have from cameras in the ballpark and so on is so good compared to what it was, but it's more that. not only are they gathering all those pictures, but it's nonstop spewing data that then they, you know, this is the whole big data and data analytics field where now it gets fed into a lot of systems, there's a lot of number crunching, and they can figure out the impact of every little thing. You know, just as a different example, they talk about spin rate a lot. Well, you couldn't have even measured the spin rate before because you couldn't, you know, the cameras couldn't pick it up. Now, you know, they can nail it, and they tell you how many spins per second per, you know, for everything, for what's going on, and now they know how to, you know, they use that as a basis then for starting to coach pitchers to modify their spin rate and make the ball break more, break less, you know, do what they want it to do. And, you know, it's those kinds of things. The same thing is going on in the manufacturing world, where you have, you know, all the equipment that used to be standalone equipment. You'd have a robot, you know, maybe, you know, assembling a part in your factory, and it would stand alone and do what you programmed it to do. But now they're all connected to each other, you know, via networking technology, and in many cases, just, you know, funneling data to the internet. And you're starting to get, you know, the whole idea that you can so finely manage a manufacturing process to the point that in the simplest case, that you have machines that are recognizing ahead of time when it's going to be time for maintenance and preventative, you know, and prevent outages, to the point where the machines start coordinating with each other, so that if one is sending a part downstream that is just a little bit off, that's being reported where the part is received, and the adaptation is happening automatically to repair it. And that's, you know, when you hear people talking about Industry 4.0, this is what they mean.
Well, people were supposed to do that in any kind of an assembly line, but you're right, now it's become more automated. But,
well, and there, as a result, it's so fine-tuned, Tom, that all the adaptations happen in real time, but in addition to that, you know, it starts squeezing, you know, the amount of work in process inventory you have, which then affects the amount of raw materials inventory that you need, so the carrying costs of inventory start going down, and you know, in some cases it's replacing humans, in some cases it's you know, we're substituting in different kinds of jobs for you know, where people are being reskilled into more into the maintenance of the machines rather than doing the work, et cetera. You can tell I'm gearing up for to moderate a manufacturing day panel today, can't you?
Oh, you know, I would like to not necessarily me, but if we could find any of the guys if they're still alive. All that stuff was totally ingrained into the procedures. Maybe half of them weren't even written down. At a place like Pullman. But none of this has changed. It's just a question of how you do it and how you do it with efficiency. More efficiently. I mean, first thing you do when you go to put together the side of a railroad car and you get the post is measure the post and see if it's the right size you're supposed to be getting, right? The last thing you want to do is start welding.
And while that's true in when you're manufacturing rail cars and things like that, imagine the ability if you're doing you know, valve gaskets or something like that. How easy is it to stop and measure each one of those? It's damn near
impossible. I'm talking about either one, but I'm saying there's always a quality control and a quality assurance. I mean, there always was. It's a question of how the more efficient you get, the better, obviously.
The problem with, you know, with inspections is it's expensive.
Yeah.
With physical inspections. So the idea is that you want to prevent the need for inspections so you don't have to do them, and that entails doing it right, you know, upstream, or doing it right down, you know, yeah, upstream, so that you don't have to inspect it downstream. But that also means that when something goes awry upstream, that you know, if you're not inspecting, then it'll fall out of, you know, it'll just completely go nuts on you, and you'll have to you'll have a lot of scrap. Well, if you don't have the inspections, and at the same time, or at least you have machine inspection, and at the same time you go ahead and react in real time every time something's just a little bit off, then you really have something there from a standpoint of cost management. And this is why, all in all, this is why I believe you're going to start seeing more supply chain, supply sourcing moving back into the U.S., because the U.S. is very, very far ahead in that kind of automation, and it's going to create more reliable supply chains, because you don't have to worry about disruptions, for political reasons, for COVID-19 type of reasons, yep, or any of those kinds of things. And I think that's a lesson being learned right now.
Well, when you're making widgets and you're making 90 bazillion of them, that's one sort of thing. If you're making things for, you know, 60 locomotives or 60 rail cars, it's sort of different, because then you can inspect based on the value of the part. But at Pullman, what they would do actually, if you had a piece of metal, say, the size, they actually would make the piece in hardwood, you know, the perfect size. So you could use that template for your machine, and on the piece of wood, it would say, plus or minus 2/1000, inspect every fifth one. All your instructions would be on the piece of wood. So, I mean, it was there. It just, anyway, Kevin, I want to shift gears here dramatically into, the market's going down. Now the question you're going to hear all day is, okay, take a look at Caterpillar. It's down 388. They had earnings that were down, you know, whatever, big number from last year. So it was down yesterday, it's down again today, but it's trading 154. And I'm going to say Caterpillar got down to 90 in March. Now that was the COVID stuff, so let's say it's a little low. But just beware of a stock that was, you know, 165, and all of a sudden it's 155, and everybody, the Kramers of the world, are basically jumping out of the TV telling you what a spectacular buy they are just because it's down 10 bucks. Could very well be. I don't know. He knows more about Caterpillar than I do. But just be very careful when you have a run-up like this, like we've had in some of these stocks, that maybe they don't match what these companies are going to make for any time soon. I mean, you get a company like Snap that's up from, you know, 20-something to 40-something. I'm not so sure that the first time it's under 40, it's a steal and buy it. It could be, you know, if all of a sudden people continue to use it, and maybe they get taken. Who knows? It could be taken over. Anything could happen. But the thing that's interesting, Kevin, is we have two of the biggest I don't know if you've been watching AMD and NVIDIA are doing two of the biggest acquisitions in that space forever. We got NVIDIA has announced a $40 billion acquisition of ARM. I don't even know what the hell ARM was. AMD said on Tuesday it's agreed to buy Xilinx, which I have done trades in, for $35 billion. I had some clients that had Xilinx. But you know what's unique about this is, and this, I would do this in a second, if somehow or another Matty Weber got like stock and stocks and jacks trading like, you know, 500 or something, I would use the stock from stocks and jacks to buy like, whatever, ESPN. I mean, it's so bizarre. These guys are going to buy these companies strictly for stock, and they're going to take it. They're going to give these guys $40 billion worth of NVIDIA stock. I mean, really? I mean, when that stuff...
Yeah, that always works out, you know.
Oh, yeah, well, it always works out for NVIDIA.
Yeah, it does. And you know, it is interesting that the you had mentioned Juniper and FireEye today, you know, with strong earnings, and stock prices up. That's the one space where there really is, despite everything else that's going on, ongoing innovation, and a real market need for their products. And AMD has made such a huge inroads in the chip market, it used to be that you never went with AMD. You always wanted you remember their name?
Intel.
Oh shoot, I'm
Intel.
I can't believe I'm blanking
Intel.
On these.
Intel.
Intel. Thank you. You always want an Intel. No, I don't want an AMD processor. Get me an Intel. That's not true anymore. And so, you know, these are companies that it that doesn't bother me as much about what they're doing. Now, whether they're, you know, whether these are the kinds of purchases and acquisitions that I would support, I'd have to take a long look at them. But it doesn't surprise me that those are the companies that are doing well, and it's not especially artificial.
I'm not saying that they're not doing well, but I'm saying anytime that your stock is up 162% in 1 year, which one of them is here? The NVIDIA shares, and somebody says we're going to let you issue $40 billion worth of stock and just hand it to us, and we're going to take the bet that even though you've diluted, it's not like we're forcing you to go out in the market and buy it and then give it to us, okay? Which means
you're diluting the market. Basically, you said, well, we'll just create more and let you have it.
Yeah,
and that's a bet. You know, that's an interesting bet.
Especially when you're up this much. So I don't know how many shares NVIDIA has outstanding. I probably should have looked. And I mean, what this means, whether they've got to issue, you know, 10%, 20%, 40% new shares. But, wow. I mean, it could work out fine. But what if the market... There's been a couple of these, and I wish I had the... with the brain capacity to remember, but there's been a couple of these where people have done these kind of things at like $60, and 6 months later, the stock's trading 15. I mean, you got to be real careful. I mean, if I'm owning one of these companies, if I'm the Xilinx or somebody here, the minute I get my shares, I'm selling.
I would too. The other thing I would say is that I'd have to look into Xilinx as well and their financial state, because it could, you know, I don't know whether this is I don't know if they consider this a smart bet on NVIDIA, or actually they're AMD, aren't they? Xilinx is, yeah. AMD acquisition. Do they think they're making a smart bet on AMD, or are they just desperate to get out from under whatever they're under?
Well, I mean, if Xilinx is worth $35 billion, okay, you're coming up with stock, and you're paying people $35 billion for something that's worth $35 billion, right? So, you know, all of a sudden you're going to start making, you know, $3 billion a year off that, I'll use the term division. You've done well, girl, right? There's nothing wrong with that, correct?
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
I see Xilinx is up, so...
Yeah.
The market is either totally irrational, which is or a lot of people thinking that's a good bet. But you're right. What you did was you just diluted. You made a deal and you diluted it. Now I assume that they weighted that dilution into the price they negotiated.
Yeah, but you don't know the formula here. And I guess I should be beating around the bush for those that have never seen something like this. Normally, if somebody's going to buy, you know, Webby's hot dogs, they're going to say, okay, we're going to close, where are we now, October something, we're going to close on Thanksgiving Day, and we're going to pay you $50 a share for Webby's hot dogs. Okay, now you're basing your value on the dollar. Now, of course, I could go into some esoteric University of Chicago rant regarding, well, how do you know how much the dollar's going to be worth on Thanksgiving? But let's leave that for another day. Let's just say dollar's...
Esoteric University of Chicago Rand, is that redundant?
Pretty much. Well, let's just leave that for another day. You know you're going to get $50 on Thanksgiving Day, or you're 99% sure, because these guys claim that they've got the financing in place and blah, blah, blah. Right? So you're going to get your $50. Now, it's quite another if I'm going to say I'm going to give you 2.45 shares of Stocks and Jacks on Thanksgiving Day, because Stocks and Jacks, by the way, is not public. But if it was, you'd say, where's this Stocks and Jacks trading? And if it's trading at $10, you'd say, okay, 2.45 looks to me like that's $24.50 worth of Stocks and Jacks shares is going to be going to Matty Weber's place. But that's based on today's price. Now, you've seen this, I'm sure. You probably don't remember too many of them. But sometimes, if Stocks and Jacks shares go down between now and Thanksgiving, sometimes it's just your bleep out of luck, take it the way it is, or Stocks and Jacks might be called upon to sweeten and say, you're going to get 2.75 shares because the stocks are down a little bit. Or you're going to get $3 a share plus the 2.45. So sometimes that's how all this negotiation goes. But just be careful when you're talking about a certain amount of shares of another company that you may, in fact, what Kevin says, say Xilinx runs up today. And because of the value, because of the formula, it looks like it's worth more. The formula of how many shares you're getting of AMD stock. If you're not that bullish on AMD stock, or you're not so bullish on the coronavirus, or you're not so bullish on the whoever the next administration is, Trump or Biden, it's up to you to sell your Xilinx today. Because if you think, wait a minute, this AMD's level will be down 30% by Thanksgiving, or something. If you feel that way, your move is simply to sell it today. Now, I'm not recommending that at all. I'm just saying, if you feel, because there's way more variables here than if it's just, hey, you're going to get $50 type of thing. That's all I'm trying to say, Kevin. Is that understandable at all, or did I muddle it up too bad?
Yeah, I think I got it. As your esoteric University of Chicago rants go, that was a pretty good one.
Well, I'm just saying, you know, you're betting on the price of the only thing you know is today's formula and today's price, if it's a premium to your stock today or not. Because I've seen stuff on the trading floor, Superior Oil, Evans Products, there were ones that were stock deals with other companies, and by the time it happened, it was like the exact same price it was. And the only chance you had to get a premium was like the first day. Then I've seen others where it didn't look like that great of a deal, and the other stock went up, and it was a great deal on the day it happened. So, I mean, you can't. It's up to you constantly to keep thinking. I guess is the question, or start thinking. Or do we really do any thinking anymore? Or what are we doing? We wait for our politicians to think for us.
It hurts the ball club.
Yeah, it hurts them. Yeah. What do you say? Wet nurse to a dead from the neck up. Ball club out of the greatest lines. Whoever wrote that line in The Natural. Remember that one, Matty?
I do. Was that The Natural?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here I am, all the years in the game, and here I am, wet nurse to a dead from the neck up ball club. Wilford Brimley. So, Kevin, what do you make of this? I mean, are we've had the Fed pushing. Now, the Fed is still pushing with the money, even though there is no plan, right? There's no stimulus plan, but they're still putting stuff out there, which they pretty much said they were going to do. One of the Fed, not Powell or not, what's her name, the second in command said that we're basically going to push some money into the system, even though, you know, we don't know if they're going to come up with a stimulus plan, which they claimed, which they did not. I can't believe they're just going to let this thing fizzle out here. I mean, I would have thought at the very least somebody would have said that everybody who had a PPP before it would get half of it again, and everybody would get a check for $600 or something. I never dreamed they would stand on nothing. Did you?
You know, and here's where I think the Republicans, and McConnell could have gotten this to the floor as in the Senate, or probably could have gotten it to the floor in the Senate, is they should have just, tactically speaking, just from a political standpoint, they should have said, here's a clean PPP extension. Let's vote. Because tactically, you know, were the Democrats really going to vote against that?
Well, what do you mean by extension?
You take the program and you do it again. You know, I know they haven't, there's some parts of the program that they haven't even spent all of what they
but I mean, if a firm that, first time through. But a firm that qualified for 100 in April or May, does that mean they get another 100? Or we're talking about new firms who forgot to apply?
Yeah, it'd probably be both.
Okay,
but and I'm not suggesting that that's good policy. What I am saying is, though, it would have been good politics, and so I'm surprised it didn't happen.
For some reason, and you know, I talk about this with the various guests. There are these, I'll use the term mundane rules that where we just can't go there. We can't have a single bill. No matter which side's pushing it, we have to have this. Oh no, if that one's going, there seems to be, for whatever reason, all kinds of, I'll use the term, bipartisan agreements around for a program, a subsidy, you name it, spending that is hanging around waiting for a bill. And I don't know why that is necessarily, Kevin, all of a sudden, that's the way we're doing business. But
well, yeah, first of all, there's this mindset that everything has to be comprehensive, whatever that means.
Yeah.
That should be the most frightening word in politics, is comprehensive. Because what that means is it's big, far-reaching, and full of unintended consequences.
Kevin, we got a dash here, but Friday we'll talk maybe a little bit about the NCAA. Is the the Irish are ranked pretty high, but is it really the top four and then the rest of the world? I think it might be.
It might be the top two and the rest of the world.
Ohio State's in there, I think. You don't think so?
We'll see. You know, they've only played one game, so it's hard to say.
Yep, that's true. All right, Bud, we'll talk at you. SP Futures now down 53. Ouch. NASDAQ Futures down 146. Come back with Professor Russell Rhodes. He'll solve all our problems.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here.
Something happening here.
Blowing one back, Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Al. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. SP Futures now down 49.50, almost 50. NASDAQ Futures down 140. That is really ugly. We're getting uglier here, seeming as we go. Let me see where the Dow is. Dow's got to be down, 496.
You talking about us getting uglier or the markets?
Market's getting pretty ugly. Now, Matty, I know you've... Russell, how are you?
I'm good. I'm ugly too. Go ahead.
Well, we have to have our friend, Mr. Weber here, explain to me. I know he's turning into this agnostic thing, or at least he thinks he is. Now tell me that somebody in New Orleans didn't piss off the big guy upstairs. Cause this,
I think a lot of people did.
This hurricane is going to be the fifth named storm going to the same place this year. You can't tell me that somebody didn't piss somebody off.
Yeah, that's terrible. I love New Orleans. I hope they get a break here for a while.
They need a break for like a decade.
My long-term plan was always to retire down there.
Little humid, for me. So many bugs.
That doesn't bother me because I grew up in a humid place as well. But after the Katrina thing, I was like, nah, I don't really want to live in a bathtub that if one little thing breaks, the whole thing floods.
Yeah, that's
which
essentially
kind of what New Orleans is.
Yeah.
Well, you know you're in trouble when they bury people above ground.
Yeah.
By the way, we have this question here, and I'm hesitant to bring it up on the air because I don't know what it means, but I'm just going to throw it out there, and maybe, Chief, you remember it, or maybe Russell has some insight. But Dave in Pensacola writes in, I am looking for days last week when Chief had good conversations with Fighting Irish regarding ACB. Do you remember what that is?
ACB.
I saw that tweet, too. They said that, I saw that. Actually, I started listening to you guys because I thought, oh, gosh, they're fighting today. And but you guys were being all civil and talking about manufacturing. But the way that I took it was he wanted to hear an opinion and, like, a non-emotional opinion about our new Supreme Court justice.
Oh,
that must be it, yeah.
Okay, that's what I thought it meant.
I would I'll lob one out there. I have a couple of concerns and three concerns on the court, and it has nothing to do with her individually. I think she's pretty special, mm-hmm. actually. You know, there's nothing. She's maybe a hair conservative for me, but so what? I don't mind that. But as long as everything is sort of balanced and we don't. Here's my concern on the Supreme Court, and it's a rant here, and I actually, if you think I'm being a blithering idiot here, it's only because I got this from Matt Weber. I mean, as you say, how's he blaming me here? Matty did a study. See, Matty does stuff now. He did a study regarding the amount of people that are represented essentially by the blue states versus the red states, and how when you talk about your vote counting more in some states versus others, in terms of the two senators per state, how it's getting really, really far afield. And there are people that say...
And to be fair, it's more about populated states versus unpopulated states, but that happens to work out more often than not, that it's more blue than red. Yeah.
Right. So I know if you're from North Dakota, you think the horses and bullets should count as people, but, you know they don't. I mean, I'm sorry, they don't. So when you have... Essentially, a Senate. If you were to add up the amount of people, and I'm just saying this. You said the question was asked. If you were to ask me, or Matty would do this to go through and look at the amount of people that are represented by the Republican majority versus the Democratic minority, I'll bet it's pushing Democrats 40% more, Matty, 60, 80, 100% more. So we're talking about a little bit of tyranny by the minority, not so much in the Senate stuff, that it can handle. But when those people that have the essentially minority status, and this could change, start putting other people that are very, very important, probably more important than they are really, in another spot essentially for 40 years or 50, however long it takes, that to me is a little much. And which brings me to point number two, I think she's too young. For a lifetime job, I don't think you should be putting people in their 40s. I just think, you don't do that. And the other part of that I absolutely can't handle about the Supreme Court stuff, and maybe this is new or maybe I'm just picking it up. When you have all these people in the world, we have how many lawyers on the show, we have people, we know some judges in Chicago that are good ones and so forth. Out of all the people, they pick this lady or this guy and they drag him into a closed door meeting with all the people that represent one side of policy and they grill the living bleep out of him or her for a day and they ask him every question known to man. And the first thing they do, and they pretty much say how I think, or they wouldn't get the job, how they're going to vote on this side or the other where they are. Then they walk in front of the public, the American people, and the Congress, the People's House, or the Senate, and say, "Oh man, I didn't say anything. There's nothing preconceived here. I just happened to be somebody walking down the street, and they pluck me. Give me a friggin' break." So those are the three things about the Supreme Court that I don't like. But having said that, I don't have any problem with her. I mean, she seems pretty darn bright and nice family and a whole bit, and I, you know. And as far as the Catholic upbringing, I honestly believe, being a Catholic myself, that if push comes to shove, if somebody tries to do something really totally immoral, even if it's her party, I'm not saying they would or they won't, she will resist it like Roberts does. If it really gets bad, I count on her to do that. Now, is that really crazy, Russell, or not?
No, not at all. That's actually, you really did kind of sum up my position or my attitude about her, as I think she seems like a really solid person. And I think within the next 2 years, I will bet you a cold beverage that she does something that upsets conservatives.
Yes, I would agree with that.
That she ends up on the opposite side. And you know, they didn't put up a huge fight about this, and they didn't treat her really badly during the during the confirmation hearings. And I wonder if there's a realization on the other side of the aisle that that's probably what they ended up getting, and she's really not all that bad.
No, I don't think. I mean, she's a good person.
You know, yeah. Well, I think she's a good person too. But I mean, just as far as the big fears of now having a 6-3 court, which it really isn't. It's a lot more of a, what are there, 9 of them. It's kind of like, I honestly think that I think she's probably as close to Roberts as you can get on this. And so what is it, 9-2? So it's probably like a 2-3-4 court, something like that, you know, where there are a couple of them in the middle that are going to basically be the swing votes and everything.
I will say this, though. I've been very upset, as everybody knows, listening, even though I try not to show it that much. I'm very upset with a lot of things that I thought in this country, in this Congress, in Washington, that were somewhat sort of gentleman rules. Not that women aren't there. I'm just using the mm-hmm. men as a... that there is a way of going about how we do things. You know, we don't... If we see somebody coming to the door, we don't let it close just to piss them off. I mean, it's just, there's a mm-hmm. way... There's a way we go through life. And I would have real problems being as big a sleazebag as this McConnell is. That, you mm-hmm. know, 4 years ago, not even giving a guy a chance with 6 or 7 months to go to an election and then saying, what are you talking about? Now with 2 weeks to go, we can do it, or 2 months. I mean, I think that just really sucks. So if Trump gets back in, and I was the Democrats win the Senate, the first thing I would do is say, President, you better hope that nobody dies in the Supreme Court. I don't care what you do. We're not bringing somebody up for 4 years. 4 years. You know what? Sometimes, and I'm not doing it because I think that's right. I think it's wrong. Mm-hmm. I think it's wrong. But I think we need to get it out there. What's the number? What are we going to do? How are we going to behave for the next 50 years when this happens?
Mm-hmm.
Is it?
You know what? Set a rule. And follow the rule.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
let's figure out what it is.
Set a rule. Don't have. I mean, that's actually, you know, if we're supposed to be, you know, a country of laws with respect to stuff like that, and you know, I actually have a different opinion as to why Obama didn't push too hard for his guy. There were rumors that time around. There were rumors that. You know, Hillary was actually going to nominate Obama for the spot, and they really thought Hillary would win, and that's why they, you know, didn't push too terribly hard on the thing.
Well, it certainly could be that there were rumors. There's rumors all over.
Yeah. But so I think there was a little. I think they didn't push back as hard as they possibly could.
That could be
because they didn't see the urgency. You know, in this situation here, there was some urgency because they felt like they were going to have control of this thing in about 4 months, and they could appoint their own guy.
But look what's happened, you know? Russell, in the last decade. Well, more than a decade. It was mm-hmm. people in Congress essentially didn't trade. You didn't trade your own account. You put stuff in escrow, right?
Yeah.
Now, all of a sudden, these guys trade whenever they damn well please. Now, how did that happen? Okay, was that a gentleman's rule that we just decided there was no rule? I mean, Trump.
I don't think there was really a rule.
there was a way people behaved before Cheney came along, and people explained it on it afterward. And what about there was a attorney-client privilege, very very key thing in this country. So all of a sudden, you know, Trump uses his attorney to do stuff that were not attorney-wise. Now, is there such a thing as attorney-client privilege? I mean, in our area, I mean, I don't know if this has happened, but I have a couple of attorney friends that are do a lot of work with FINRA. And there's a question now that if you know, whenever I do emails to clients and stuff, I use the PTI email. Because there's a backup system that I can't erase them, not that I would want to, but I can't erase them.
Yeah, you have to keep your record.
But you can't, they're not trusting you to do that. There's got to be one FINRA-approved place, right? Go figure. Mm-hmm. It's not like there's 30 of them. There's like one, right, that you got to use. So you got to pay these guys. But now the thought is that if I communicate back and forth with my attorney, if I needed one, then once it's on a third-party system, it's not attorney-client privilege. Well, what the bleep, Russell? I mean, what are we doing here? Are we trying to become less and less free by the second? And yet we're seeing our people in Washington blow these rules up. And I don't think people know we're on foot or horseback. It doesn't surprise me that younger people look at what's going on and they say, if it ain't illegal, if they're not getting arrested, it must be okay. Which is not the way you live. Or should live.
No. Everybody laughs when I say this, but I teach financial ethics at Loyola. And ethics are, you know, there's rule of law and the financial ethics that the CFA Institute puts out there are higher up or more stringent than laws. And they'll kick you out of the they'll take your CFA away from you after it takes you years to get it. If you violate their ethics standards, and the whole idea there is just because it's legal doesn't mean it's right.
Okay, but then
you know what I mean.
But then the new rule is,
you know, so if it's okay for me to, if it's okay for me to trade ahead of my client or something like that, if there's really not a law about it, but there's some CFA standards about it. Which one's right?
Well, so if I walk in and put in your class and you do this whole thing on ethics, and I sneak up in my snidely whiplash little mustache and my local 12 t-shirt from Boris Batinoff, and I say that's all well and good, but here's my rule: if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying.
Yeah, I had a student say that to me the other day. Because I was having a little trouble with people sharing quizzes from class to class. And so I switched the quizzes up a little bit and figured out who'd been sharing.
Oh, the guy
and he goes, well, you know, if we're not cheating, we're not trying to get our best grade. And I'm like, that's not the way it works here.
I sort of admire this.
You know, I said, so basically you're creating extra work for me to make sure you guys don't cheat. Now I have to make, instead of three quizzes a week, I have to make nine. You know, I said, how happy do you think that makes me when I start grading your subjective stuff?
Yeah.
He kind of stopped fighting with me at that point.
That's when you get out the red pen and
I caught somebody cheating once and I went on such a tirade I thought that I was going to get fired over it. So, because it's really a big pet peeve of mine.
Did I ever tell you my red pen story?
Nope.
There I was in a class with Milton Friedman's teaching, right? And, of course, he's such a spectacular guy. I was going to say something else. Anyway, at Notre Dame, I took a graduate-level course. And I went to this professor named Professor Bonello, one of the nicest men I've ever met. And I said, you've got a two-part course here, money and banking. And I missed the first part. I'd like to take a graduate course. And he said, boy, I've heard about you. You've got a pretty good grade point. I'd love to have in the class. Don't worry, the other one was on banking. This one's on money. That's when I first started learning about, you know, money supplies and stuff. He goes, so you don't, totally separate. So I want to see how you do. So when I went and I did real well, you know, and we got to be buddies. And so he was perfectly straight with me. So then Milton Friedman had this class, which was two quarters. So I went to see the little fellow. He's all 5'1". At the time, I'm 6'4", so I'm standing there going, Professor Friedman, I'd like to take the second part of this class, and blah, blah, blah. I want to know if that makes any sense, because I didn't take the first part. All right, no problem. You just pile right in. Nobody, one doesn't really carry over much in the other. Okay. So I get in there, and it's an auditorium class, not a big auditorium. There's probably 100 seats. There's 80 people there. Well, in the economics part in Chicago, you could actually audit. They had people audit classes. Like, you never took the class for a grade. Business school people just want to get there and get out. But in the economics school, you were a lifer. So you would sit there and you would audit a class like an entire quarter. And then you'd say, okay, next time I'll take it for real because I already took it like once, essentially. And I'll take it for a grade. Or when you got the first exam, you could say, this is too tough, and you could punt. And they'd give you like 75% of your tuition back, and you could take it again next time if you wanted to. So I get the final. He gives everybody a take-home final. He says, this will cover both quarters. I go, uh-oh, I got a problem. And, oh, by the way, the final's next week. And the take-home was like a couple of questions like, here's Nixon's wage and price controls. Analyze these from a stock and flow analysis. I mean, that's the kind of test. So basically, figure out how this affected everybody in society. that was a Milton Friedman. You always had you could never do what people are doing now. Where you say, hey, no. I closed the bars and we're stopping COVID. You have to say, no, wait a minute. First of all, maybe you're not stopping. I won't go down there and go, but look what else you're doing. I mean, there's a million other things that are happening because of what you just did. You got to follow those too, which, of course, today people don't do. And so I'm sitting there. I show up for the final. There's 9 people there out of the 80. Everybody else was either auditing the place.
Everybody else was just hanging out.
Or punted. Yeah. So I'm sitting there and like, you know, you can't be too far alone, you can't hide in the class. So he's grading the midterms while I'm taking the final with his big red pen, and everyone, he's going, shh, shh. Every time I looked up, I figured, that's got to be mine.
that's me.
Yeah. And anyway, I ended up getting a C from the knucklehead. I think the first hook I ever got, but it was worth it though, because you got to listen to Milton Friedman.
Anyway. I don't remember if I told you or not, but I found on YouTube a Friedman on old school Donahue, and it was just awesome.
Oh yeah, he was something.
Yeah.
The only thing is, you never wanted to ask him a question because he's up there doing, like, you know, derivatives and stuff on his supply chain stuff. If you ever asked him the question, it never dawned on him that the reason why you asked the question is because you couldn't understand the complexity of that answer. His explanation to you would be twice as complex.
Mm.
Which.
And probably very often to different subjects altogether.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so you're like, why did I even ask? So nobody even asked. You never even just rolled with it.
I gotta start using, I like that. I like that a lot.
Yeah.
I think you guys have just told me how I can get about 15 hours a week of my time back.
Yeah, just whatever if you're doing algebra, and somebody doesn't understand the algebra, then you explain it to them in calculus.
Exactly. I can do that.
Yeah. Even if you don't know the
students will stop asking me questions.
Even if you don't know the calculus, nobody else will know it. Just start throwing symbols up there. Right?
Yeah.
Well, clearly the something coefficient of something, you didn't count, and as soon as every eyes blur over, then you say, does everybody get it now? Then you get all the head bobs, you go on to the next subject.
There are two kinds of people, though, whether it's in school or in the workplace or anywhere. There are the people that always ask questions, and then there are the people that never ask questions. And I can't imagine that the people that always ask questions are that stupid and that the people that never ask questions are that smart. It's just two different kinds of people. I don't think I've ever asked a question in a class in my entire life.
We sat in the back row, and when the guy says, if there aren't any other questions, everybody can go, and then there'll be a guy like Thomas in the front row sticks up his hand and you want to shoot him.
Yeah, absolutely. I just can't imagine teacher, by the way, you said you were gonna hand out an assignment at the end of the class. I think you forgot.
Yeah. Those are the same people that are happy to be banned from bars now.
Yeah. I've got those.
God. So
that everybody else doesn't particularly
I drove by your school the other day. There's nobody there. Is anybody in class?
I know. No. You're talking about the Chicago, the behind the crack McDonald's, right?
No, no, I'm talking about the real one on North Shore.
Oh, there are some people up there, yeah, but not a whole lot. I don't think anybody's in the dorms.
What are the kids doing taking like pre-med and stuff? How the hell do you do that?
They go to class. People that have labs that they have to go to, they are going to class. They're working around that. But let's say you've got a class that's like 2 hours lecture, 1 hour lab. The lecture part will be online.
Okay.
And, they've divided them. And we have a couple of business classes like that as well, where your quantitative finance type things.
Without getting out of school here, is there a tuition pushback I'm hearing from a lot of other places?
I'm not hearing it too much. I am hearing a lot of the graduate students. Our winter quarter starts in 2 weeks, and that's going to be, again, online. But a lot of graduate students are really wanting to do something, come back to class on spring, at least partially. And I'm director of the Master of Science in Finance program now. I'm actually going to do something on the holidays where if they want, they can come and meet some of the other people they've been going to school with, not, in person. And it's unofficial and it's not affiliated with Loyola, because Loyola would get mad.
What if somebody gets pregnant in one of those events?
Do what?
What if somebody gets pregnant in one of those events? Is that evidence they weren't social distancing?
If they get pregnant at one of those events or something like that, then they'll just name the child either Russell or Russella.
But it's evidence they weren't socially
responsible.
You have to wear a mask?
I most likely, depending on what JB tells us.
I'm talking about, do you have to wear a mask when you're getting pregnant?
Typically that's one of the ways you avoid it, isn't it?
Yes.
I'm thinking of something else.
We've not talked about it long enough. Where's this market going to go? What's everybody supposed to do? What's this VIX? The VIX
it's going to keep going down for a while. I wouldn't be all that excited about buying into stocks. And this is not a political statement about Joe Biden being the next president. I think it's just a fact that taxes are going to go up in 2021. And if you've got something you want to take a profit on and pay less taxes on it, you're going to do it, in the next couple of months. I don't see it necessarily. I don't see the stock market, and, Trump will come out and say, look, the stock market's going down. See, you should have reelected me. I don't think it's an endorsement or a non-endorsement in Biden. It's just a reality that it's going to cost you a little bit more tax-wise to take profits on things. And because we're near all-time highs on a few of the indexes, people are probably going to want to take the profits in 2020 instead of 2021. So you'll get some selling pressure. I think the sell-off on Monday was all about that, that people are starting to realize that Biden's going to win.
Not because of the PPP and stuff. And is the election...
No.
Well, I ask you this. Is the election, when you use the term election, is it 100% White House or is it 50-50 Senate White House? I happen to think we're pushing more towards... Might be 70-30 Senate.
I think there's this realization that they're going to win the... They are going to win the Senate, too.
You're sure?
Democrats are going to win the Senate. They're going to have the White House, and there's no way they could lose the House of Representatives.
No, I don't, I'm not sure they win the Senate.
Right now, the real politics has them 51-49 after the election.
They have what's his name?
So they can lose one of those and still have the Senate.
Well, they have,
Kamala can go up and be the
deciding
vote.
They have Lindsey Graham winning or losing?
They have him winning.
Okay, because didn't $100 million come from the Democrat side to beat him?
Yeah, I don't know why you would do something like that.
I can't stand the guy, but I don't like the idea of outside money coming in either.
Yeah. But I don't know why. I think that's kind of, maybe there's... Maybe there's a little personal vendetta with somebody there, but I think that's not money well spent.
$100 million, yeah, it's something. God,
if that's what it takes, I don't really know if they do win it. I don't know if that's money well spent Don't you figure in 6 years they probably, give it back?
Well, if you're going to get a contract that you didn't get before. There's a lot of contracts that are worth $100 million that people are getting these days. SP Futures down 52. SP Futures down 157. Be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks,
stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Right here, right now, right now. Hello, and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tim Allies, Mr. Mel Weber on the board. SP futures now down 55.25. It's the lowest I've seen them. NASDAQ futures down 168. Dow down over 500, say 510 or somewhere. It's jumping all over. No stocks in the Dow pre-market I have up. I have no stocks in the transportation average up. We drove the VIX up. We got GE up and we've got Juniper up. Those two guys had earnings, so up a little bit. Even Boeing had earnings earlier. They're down. They're down a buck. So there's really no good news anywhere if you're bullish. Nikkei down 67. Asia avoided the brunt of this. Japan down 67 points. That's 0.3%. Shanghai up 14.5. Hang Seng down 78.3. Europe, however, not so much. DAX down 436. That's 3.6%. That's a big move. FTSE down 109. That's 1.9. CAC around over 3% as well. That's 156 down. As a way of review, yesterday, we were down 222. The Dow. S&P down 10, NASDAQ up 72. Bonds, 0.75. Here, the Bund, minus 0.64. Japan 10-year, positive 0.02. Oil, serious whack-whack, down 4.6%. $1.82, that's $37.75. Brent, $39.58. Natural gas, still over $3 at $3.01. RBOB, $1.09. Gold, down $26 now. Silver down 70 cents. Manny, what do you got?
35 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Looks like we have an issue on the south side, a stalled semi blocking the right shoulder of I-57 on the northbound side just before getting on the Dan Ryan. So that's causing some delays. 82 the Dan Ryan on I-57 is up to 21 minutes. So there's some stop-and-go traffic. Expect delays on the northbound I-57 due to that stalled semi-truck. No issues on the Ryan itself. Bishop Ford looking okay. Same for the Stevenson. Eisenhower's been quiet all morning. Kennedy, you'll start to slow down as you approach Division on the inbound side heading into downtown. Some heavy traffic volumes there. No issues on the outbound side. Eden's looking good. Suburban tollways are all quiet, as is Lakeshore Drive. Off the expressways, it looks like we have a crash at 75th and Kingery Highway over in the western suburbs. And in the city, as we mentioned last hour, Racine Avenue is closed on the south side between 45th and 47th Street due to a fatal shooting investigation that happened overnight. At least six squad cars are on the scene there for that investigation, and that has Racine blocked. And then one other crash out in the western burbs, Gary Avenue at Lawrence Avenue, there is a crash. Weather today, lots of sunshine, a cold early, and then we'll warm up a little bit this afternoon. We'll reach a high of 52, so that'll feel nice. First time we're in the 50s in a while.
It looks like there might be some sun.
Yeah, and then we'll stay in the 50s for a few days, so that'll be good. Right now it is crystal clear and 34 degrees downtown, going up to a partly cloudy high of 52. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 71 today. Right now it's clear and 49. In sports, the World Series is over and the Dodgers are your champions. For the first time since 1988, LA takes home the trophy, beating the Rays 3-1 last night and winning the series 4-2. Corey Seager was named your MVP. And get this, Chief, we're 3 out of 4 in professional sports championships in 2020. And all three of them have gone to either Tampa Bay or Los Angeles. Tampa Bay Lightning won the Stanley Cup, the LA Lakers won the NBA Finals trophy, and then last night it was LA versus Tampa, and the LA won the World Series. So now if Tampa Bay and Tom Brady win the Super Bowl, it'll be a clean sweep for those two cities in Florida and California.
How did that kid on Tampa not get MVP?
What kid on Tampa?
The kid with the 9 home runs.
That was for the course of the playoffs. This is just for the World Series, isn't it?
Well, I mean, I'm saying he was the one-man gang in the World Series, too, for that team.
Well, they don't usually give it to a guy on a losing team, although they have before. They have before. Like if a pitcher's dominant for 2 starts or 3 starts or something, or like you said, if a guy goes off. I don't know what he did in the actual World Series because Tampa didn't score a ton of runs, but he certainly had a great playoffs.
I'm going to say that if I'm the owner of the St. Louis Cardinals and our man Russell is the GM, I'm going to call him today and say, you did what? You threw that kid in on the trade last summer? What's the matter with you? He was a throw-in?
Yeah, apparently.
That motivates you.
The Rays have a lot of guys that either they drafted and developed themselves or guys that they acquired that other teams undervalued. And I mean, the Rays are a good organization. They don't spend a lot of money because they don't have a lot of money because their stadium's horrible and no one goes to the games. But they have a really good farm system, and they have for several years. They were in the World Series, back in 08 with Joe Maddon, and they're back now, and they've had some playoff teams in between as well.
In the immortal words of your man, Tom Brenneman, everybody knows that there should be one team in Florida, and it should be in Orlando and not Tampa or Miami.
Maybe, I don't know.
Why would you do that?
Orlando's like one of the worst cities in the United States. I can't imagine.
Other than the thing that everybody automatically thinks of, I don't think it's really it. I think Orlando's, and I know I'm just setting myself up for all kinds of trouble here, but I think Orlando is kind of not the place that you really want to move to in Florida. There.
Well,
I've actually backtracked in my mind what I was really going to say.
Tampa Bay.
I was going to say Orlando is where Florida Man is from.
Yeah, Orlando's.
I didn't say it.
Orlando's got horrible crime. It's not a good city. Tampa Bay, Tampa St. Pete's a beautiful, beautiful area.
But do they any crowds?
They do for football. When COVID notwithstanding,
yeah.
I don't, for baseball they don't. But a lot of people think it's because of that stadium. It's an awful stadium.
It is not a good place.
But in general, I find that warm weather places don't care about sports as much as cold weather places.
Well, I think that the COVID has shown me that the big lie is still around. If you can talk people that are afraid to sit 1,000 people in a stadium into it's safe to fly in an airplane because you have a ventilation system like American Airlines has done and the government went along with it, if you can pull that off, my faith in the stupidity of humanity is still there.
You know, we were talking about this in the Rhodes household because we are going to get on a plane the day after Christmas. And I don't recall, and it could just be suppression of the truth, but I don't recall any big outbreak being the result of everybody being on a plane with somebody.
Well, you don't recall any big outbreak of being in a bar either. I mean, but the I'm saying...
Oh, yeah, you do.
Well, there's some.
But oh, yeah, you do. No, I mean, like, down at the Southeastern schools where everybody went back to school and then all went out to the bars.
How do you think it got here from China and spread originally?
Well, yeah, it got over from China because they weren't making you wear a mask the whole flight.
Now
they are.
I'm going to get into a mask discussion because we got markets to talk about. The idea of you and I driving to Seattle for 8 hours will take us longer than 8 hours.
A lot longer than 8 hours.
We're wearing masks next to each other. At the end of, I'm going to say, not very long time, the masks aren't making any difference. If they, it might help the guy four rows ahead of you, but sure as hell isn't helping the guy next to you. Even if it takes, you know, whatever, 50% of the bad stuff it filters, still 50% over there. And I'm saying, when you're that close, what difference does it make if your family had dinner and put the mask on between bites, that it would make any difference after sitting at the table for an hour?
No, absolutely not.
Well,
but if you're
point.
On a plane for an hour and a half and you keep that thing on the whole time, I think you can be fine. I think you'll be fine.
As a guy who's traveled all over the world, when do you think you've caught the most germs ever in your lifetime? For me, it's the couple times I've flown.
I don't think I've ever really gotten anything from being on the plane. I can't ever recall that, but the one thing that I do for myself, I always fly up front.
Oh, God. Now we're going to pull.
But I do. It's the one thing I do. I don't really have any hobbies. I don't spend a lot of money on stuff. And I fly enough to either get myself upgraded, but every once in a while, if I can't, I'll actually pay for it. Part of it is really because of what you just said. I don't want to be shoved in the back with people.
The rabble.
So I when I fly.
Well, no, but with all the germs that are floating around.
Yeah. Well, so, when I fly, I'm always in the back with the people, and I always get a cold.
You're a man of a person,
and
I'd always get. You know where I've always gotten sick. The one place it's been when I haven't ridden the L in some time, and I do.
See, that I ride every day, so I must be used to that because I never get sick from that.
Yeah,
I still ride it every day, but now no one else does.
The two times I moved to Chicago, within a week, I got really sick for a day or two, and I think that was just because I didn't have my L immunity.
Well, you got to get your immunity.
By the way, if you want to drive to Seattle, you can drive there, and guess what? You can take 90 the entire way.
That's right,
door to door. And
guess
how long it would take.
I'm going to say it's got to be...
Chief quoted 8 hours, he knows it's longer than that.
It's got to be It's got to be 2,100 miles, so I'm going to say it's 40 hours if you stop at all.
So this is nonstop, of course. I mean, if obviously you're going to have to stop multiple times, but if you just drove all the way through, you rotated turns with a group of four people or something, and you drove all the way through, Chief is almost dead on with the mileage. It's 2,043 miles. So you said 2,100. You're almost dead on. And if you drove all the way through, it would be 30 hours.
Yeah, you can go like 90 in Montana or something.
Yep, so the Google Maps...
There are a couple of states out there where you can just really...
Where you're just flying.
Yeah. I worked for a year in the middle of Kansas where I did 40 miles on the expressway every morning like at 6 a.m. And I had a Charger with a Hemi in it, and I got that thing up to about 130 every once in a while.
That's awesome.
I 130 was the highest I hit.
The only problem with those things is
it wiggled, and I pulled over to the side of the road and changed my pants and never got that fast again.
I was going to say those things.
That's awesome.
You could go fast in them, but don't try and stop or turn.
No. And it would be like I could see for about 3 miles out in front of me, and there'd be nobody around when I would be stupid like that.
Well, you know, since somebody wants to talk about this market now.
How fast have you ever driven, Chief?
I got my Oldsmobile up to like 110.
Yeah, I think the fastest I've ever gotten up to is about 110.
Well, I mean, that was my 65 Olds that had the 425, but I mean, a regular car, I mean, I don't know how much, how fast you think a Suburban would go, 95 maybe?
Yeah, probably. It would definitely get into the 90s.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, the original Mustang that they put Lee Iacocca, being the interesting fellow that he was, said he was going to put this Mustang out on a certain year, right? But he didn't have any time to like build the car. So they decided to, they made the frame, or the body, and they, you know, got some V8 engine they stuck in there. I think it was it a 283? Which is pretty hot. So what do you think frame they put that thing on in terms of, you could go fast, but you better not want to turn or stop. You know what frame they put it on?
No.
The Ford Falcon.
Oh my God! And then they put the cool metal around it.
Yeah, they put the cool metal around. They probably beefed it up a little bit. Yeah. But can you imagine?
Make it look kind of fine.
Can you imagine running that thing up to like 85 and then trying to make a turn? God, I mean, you had bias ply tires, you had 4-wheel drum brakes. I mean, the idea of going 100 miles an hour on those cars was like, Duesenberg could go what, 120? I mean, those cars
are
30s?
I have no idea. I don't even know what a Duesenberg is.
Oh, God. I was going to say, even you could get lucky in a Duesenberg.
Really? Even me? No. Yeah.
They were the most spectacular vehicles ever made.
My lucky days are behind me.
They cost something like $12,000 in a depression or something, Russell.
I know what you're talking about now. It's like the big Great Gatsby type car.
Yeah, with the big huge head. Everything was all handmade.
Or the
Auburns. Those things were, talk about works of art. They had at one point, they had something like 30 car makers in the state of Indiana. They were coach makers, and then they would buy all the body parts and the steering and engines and stuff. Mm-hmm. And these things were absolute works of art. It was really something. It's an amazing era to study. All right, we got to talk about it. We're down 63 points. I'm going to get a call from somebody. What do you think? What do I think here? Tell me.
I told you what I thought. I think that the market's starting to adjust for selling into the end of the year. There's going to be, and it's not going to be panicky type. Oh my God, the world's going to come to an end because the Democrats are taking over. But it's going to be we need to sell some stuff here and buy it back in a month or two whenever we're allowed to buy it back because there's going to be higher taxes. And
all right,
I think that's basically what's going on.
All right, the Spiders, which is the S&P, before any of the COVID fiasco. We're talking 219 was roughly, we're trading 338, all right?
Mm-hmm.
So then we ducked down with the COVID fiasco. We had a low tick of 222. We flew back to a high tick of, where the hell are we here? 357 on the 2nd of September. Went down, came back up, didn't quite make back up there. Made it back up to 354, so... Not a, and then we're near another top, and now we're heading south again. So anywhere along those numbers, 325, 300, I mean, I'm not a technical guy, 275, they all seem to have lows in that area. First of all, you think we're in danger of the 220 low? Let me ask you that first question. That's 50% down, or 30% down.
No, not that far down. Maybe 20. Off the highs, that always seems to be a typical number that holds up fairly well.
What are the chances?
You know, it's down around 20% off the high. That's where all the people on CNBC start saying, okay, we've hit the bear market, blah blah blah, and people use that as actually a trigger to turn around and start buying some stuff.
We've had people on the show. I don't know if you had a chance to opine in or not or listen in regarding as. If things are coming apart, which I'm not saying they are, but we've had some people say, you know, your mortgage 60-day stuff is 7% and usually over 2% is a problem. If this, you know, if we stay forever locked down in the city, which the amount of people that are going out of business now just not paying, just on our block down here, you haven't been down here in a while, I can point you at places, I won't say the names, that I understand are closing $50,000 in arrears in rent. I don't know what happens to that as it works its way through the system. If the owner just absorbs it, if he's okay, if he can't pay his,
his, and then the poor bank gets stuck with the building that's got no value. That's the progression right there.
So, but I don't know. Nobody knows. Every one of these things is an individual case. Nobody knows if it's if it's, you know, say you and I have owned the property, we got it from our, you know, great grandpappy, sweater and great grandpappy south side for me. And all of a sudden, you know, we don't have any mortgage on the place and we say, well, what's the difference? We don't get rent for a few months. We'll, you know, we'll live and we'll just get another guy. That's one possibility, which would be nice. But if we just refinanced it and we're up to the eyeballs on it because we bought another building, now we got a problem, right? Because we can't.
Yeah, a real problem.
So how do you determine when you're like teaching the classes and stuff and you're looking at these numbers? Because I mean, these universities now, and Loyola is certainly one of them, are all over these economic numbers. How do you, how do you trace it through? In other words, how am I going to know if Matty Weber's Bank of the Near North Side is in trouble? Is it the first day they increase their loan reserve? Should I be able to sniff it out faster than that? I mean, how do I know as an investor when my guy's got a problem? Where my guy is.
I think you dig through whatever the last quarter was and see how much how reliant they are upon real estate lending, or really commercial real estate lending. That's the one that I would be most concerned about. I don't know where you'd find out. I bet you somewhere on the Bloomberg they have numbers of, you know, who's the biggest. They rank everything as far as banks go, and I wouldn't be the least surprised if there's a place on Bloomberg to find out what banks are most susceptible to, you know, real estate, to commercial real estate in different places. Used to be easier because we had banks all regionalized, and you know, you know who to go after if something was wrong in the Midwest. You knew who to go after if something was wrong on the West Coast. That was Wells Fargo. You know, and same thing on the East Coast. Now it's a little bit more difficult because they're so much more diversified.
Well, how do you find out?
Typically, if I'm concerned about something like this in a macro way, I take a look at being short one of the ETFs that has a basket of these.
Okay.
Without trying to figure out the single one.
Well, that makes sense. So turn it around. Go the other way. How does anybody figure out? I mean, I don't think, let's say 175 West Jackson, it's a whole block of a building. It's a huge place. We used to have an office over there. We haven't had in ages, but they're 10% occupied now. People coming in. How do we know? How can we figure out? It's not as easy. It may not have been as easy then. 50 years ago, you'd probably say, you know, the mortgage was held by Continental or First National or somebody.
Yeah.
How do you figure out who they even have the mortgage with now? I mean, how do you know whether even the state of Illinois, if you're rating them, are they really going to get these tax checks? I mean, is this guy over here who's all the rents and arrears on these people?
Oh, is the state really at the end of the year?
Yeah.
Are they going to get? It's going to be, people are going to have to go on payment plans.
Well, but if you're
you can go on a payment plan for your taxes, but if you're not making any money, are you going to have to pay taxes?
Well, but you're commercial, and I don't, John Flanagan and a couple other guys on the show know way better than me. Your commercial stuff is you know, your house, allegedly, is on your market value and the multiplier, right? So,
yeah.
But if you and I have a apartment building, it's pretty much based, I guess, somewhat on the real estate, but really on the income, correct?
That's what you would, yeah. I mean, if you're a bank and you're giving a loan on it, that's what you're looking at.
But I mean,
cash flow.
But if my
The cash flow has changed dramatically.
But if my tax bill at, say, 425, used to be 440, I changed the address. Anyway, so say it's $1 million, which it probably is close to, or 750 or something, their tax bill. And they say, hey, look, 15 of our floors, and this isn't the case, but there is a place up north where the law firm's not paying the rent and they're suing them, right? They're saying,
yeah.
So, they say, look, you didn't make.
And you're going to see more of that.
But in my opinion, the building was not safe for COVID. I had to keep my people home, so my rent of, you know, $200,000 a month, I'm giving you $50,000, and you're going to like it. And sue me for the rest. So now, can that building turn around and say to Jay Pritzker, "Here's your $800,000 bill. By the way, here's $300,000. Be happy." And here's why. And because our rents are down this, is Jay going to say? Not Jay personally. Is he going to say, okay, I'm all right with that, or say no, we want the full amount? I mean, there's Every time I try and ask a question, which is why I'm not doing it so much, I in the middle of the sentence, I got like four other questions.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. And the first question that I thought of was, I doubt anybody's going to send a partial payment in.
Well, are you going to?
Yeah, I mean, really, let's say that I lost both the jobs that I have right now, and I couldn't, you know, make the property tax payment. I could make part of the property tax payment on my house, but not all of it. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to keep making my car payments, and I'm going to keep, you know, making sure that my kids have as much, you know, I can do as much for them as I possibly can with whatever I've got money-wise. The property tax is going to be way down because making a partial property tax payment is not going to slow down the sheriff coming by and evicting me.
No, what I'm saying is...
Yeah, and I think it's the same thing for the corporate play. I mean, why would you... You know, if you're struggling to get by, why would you send part of it to any state entity?
No,
I think you would want to try to hide it somewhere so that you can continue to have a little money to live off of because nobody's paying rent anymore.
No, I think
it's a more dramatic problem.
Right,
it's going to be a more dramatic problem when we take a look at 2021 in states like Illinois.
Well, if you send in a partial for the Rhodes estate, you're not essentially pitching a bitch that's all you owe. What I'm talking about in the commercial area
is saying that this is what you should really be charging me.
I'm saying my taxes were $900,000 based on, you know, $3 million of income. By the way, my income was $1 million. Here's $300,000. Be happy. And actually,
I don't think anybody's gonna even try that.
Oh, I think they are.
Send,
oh, yeah.
You send, if you don't have all of it, you don't send anything.
Well, I'm saying, well, okay, but
and then you take a look at maybe getting out of Illinois.
But what Jan Flanagan says, you will immediately file an appeal based on revenue being down.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I guess, you know, part of that's going to say, well, at least pay us what you think you owe. They're not going to want you to go, if that winds its way through court for a year, the state would rather have a piece of it now, I would think. I'm not worried about the state, but...
Yeah.
Hey, real quick, guys, we only have 2 minutes left. Changing the subject slightly, but I know Russell has opinions on this, and as does Chief. As of yesterday, 69 million Americans have already cast their ballot for the election. That's half of the total turnout of 2016.
Yeah.
What does that mean anything? Like what? I mean.
Yeah, that means that this thing's a done deal for Biden. Because they've got a much better grassroots effort on the Democrat side than the Republican side to get people out, and to go out and make sure that they get as many votes as they possibly can.
I'll tell you, I'm
just about every kid, and just about all 140 undergrads that I have right now appear to have already voted. I had one girl who. Because the only way she could vote early was if she voted last Wednesday in St. Louis. So she got in the car, drove to St. Louis, did her voting, and then headed back to Chicago.
Wow.
There's no way that any of my students are voting for Trump.
I just thought that was a staggering number. I knew a lot of people.
I think it's a great number.
But I want people to vote. It would be nice if every registered voter voted, whoever they vote for. But I just thought that was a huge number when we're still 6 days out.
I think I don't want to jam this up for you, but I think it has to do with where you are. We are. I'm perfectly confident I can walk down the street 40 yards and vote. So my thought of voting early is why are all these people doing that? But I've heard all this stuff. I've got some stuff from some of the listeners that in some states they can't get judges. They close half the polling places. You got to go forever. You got to drive forever to get to your poll. So I think they've made it in some areas are pretty darn hard to just do your regular voting.
Yeah, clearly.
So I think that this is. So I don't know what that tells you. I mean, if I voted early because I'm too lazy to walk 40 yards, I don't know what that tells you. But that I'm out of town or whatever that day. But if all of a sudden they closed my polling place in Mississippi and I gotta drive 40 miles. I guess I'm gonna go through the mail if I can. Why not?
I went ahead and voted early by mail, and honestly, I did it because I wanted to see what the process was.
I think a lot of people did that and liked it.
Yeah, just to see if a bunch of complaining comes up afterwards. I want to be able to say, well, this was my experience, instead of relying on what I hear from other people. And my experience was pretty good. I have a little receipt. The receipt says that my ballot was accepted. They saw that I voted for Joe Jorgensen, and they threw it out.
Well, I will
say that on the reply.
But, yeah, I will
no,
say
no, they did not say that on the reply. But you know,
Russell, you failed to you failed to talk the market up. We're still down 64 in the smooze, 185.
I'm gonna go cover. I'm gonna go cover my short.
Go cover your shorts. We'll be back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.